reputation on the basis of what our kids were paying for, you know. And that that was all it was for that. But our relationships with the fund, therefore, were on some occasions stormy, but overall productive. And while that arrangement didn't come out as the university envisioned, with full university authority to do, we were able to make what did come out work, and that and it worked so very much better than what we had in the past. It freed us up to get things going the way is necessary to go. No question about it. And we spent a couple billions of dollars in the process. And we actually did, my recollection tells, we actually did in a 10-year period what other places took 100 years to do. We set out with that objective in mind, that in 10 years, we were going to go into this hard enough so that we could come up with a facility that others had taken a century to produce. And we didn't get it. I don't think that there's ever been a university growth program or matching state universities ever in the history of the world, or in our country specifically.
Well, I think that's on the small scale of Stony Brook, that's the failing of a lot of the faculty and the administration, that in 25 years or in 30 years now, Stony Brook's growth has been a remarkable example of what is possible if a state like New York decides it wants to do a job in the field of higher education. And so they feel that somehow the story should be told.
We had such ambitions for and hopes for Stony Brook because it represented really an opportunity for the university to go from scratch in a program that was able potentially to achieve international recognition. And the thrust was to do it quickly. We used to joke among ourselves about instant Caltech, but it wasn't a joke to some of us, because some of us had no idea that these things couldn't be done. Sure, we had problems with it. I mean, some of those problems manifested themselves in ways that would delay, that would postpone accomplishment, whatever. But I think on balance, it was a story of remarkable achievement, and a story that the people in Stony Brook have a right to be very proud of, particularly those who are on the front line. It was all right for us to dream about how things could happen and to try to put the wherewithal there, but it still had to be done by the people who got up every morning and went to the place and made it a university worthy of the name. And I can remember arguing most vigorously for breakthroughs in what was happening, whether it was physically or academically, things of that kind, because it was important that take place. And the fact that it had not been done before, or the fact that expenditures of that type had not been done before, made no never mind to those of us who were really concerned. And I think really, one of these years, maybe Frank Moore will be given credit for the tremendous drive and enthusiasm that he brought to the development of the university system. Because if there's any one individual who is responsible for the university being its growth and development, it is Frank Moore. In the years since 1965 and so on, 1970, the past 20 years or so, there's been a lot of riding on coattails, because so much of the vision that was required, so much of the things that were being done, so much of the effort that was being made was sort of in place. And I think there has been insufficient credit given or recognition given to the fact that took place. I remember...
Let me stop you for just a second. Now, he is dead. There are some files in the trustee's office. There are only two on Stony Brook. But Martha Downey tells me that Mrs. Moore is in Florida and that she has Frank Moore's diaries that he kept, apparently religiously. I would hope that those would not be destroyed and that somehow they could be preserved. Now, the reason I say this, Judge Sullivan was chairman of our local council for quite a while after Ward Melvin, when this discussion about history was in process down at Stony Brook. I called his wife, turned out it's his second wife.
Yeah.
And I called to see if there were any of the judge's files that referred to Stony Brook. And she said she would look. I got a letter back saying that they had nothing in the house. She had been in touch with the secretary, and that all reference to Stony Brook had been, all his files apparently had been destroyed. All right, now...
I don't think all his files were destroyed until after it was determined that they existed elsewhere.
You mean Sullivan? I'm talking Sullivan. That's the reason I'm concerned with Frank Moore and the possibility of at least getting a look at the diaries to see.
I think that any of the files which related to Stony Brook are in the university's possession. That is, any of the files that Moore had. What his diary might show, I don't know. I don't know whether Mrs. Moore would think favorably about that or not. I really don't know.
Yeah.
It would be personal preference. If they still exist, whether they still exist or not, I'm not
sure. Well, Martha Downey wrote me in a letter that she thought that that his wife had them. And she thinks she's in Florida. I'm going down to Florida for a couple of months.
She's in Florida, and she lives in Florida in the wintertime and in Indian Lake in the summertime.
Indian Lake?
Yeah.
Where is that?
Up in the Adirondacks here. Indian Lake is above North Creek. It's Lake George, Warrensburg, North Creek, Indian Lake, Blue Mountain Lake, et cetera. That's a new chain of things. Indian Lake. It's from here, it's probably 120 miles in, something like that. He's had that property there on Indian Lake for many years. Going back to when I first knew him, it's been changed and developed, et cetera, over a period of time. But I don't know. I never sought access, never had access or sought access to his diaries. I knew in a sort of an offhand way that he wrote in his diaries on occasion because of something would come up that he'd make a reference to.
Well, it may not be necessary to.
My guess is knowing Frank Moore, there probably wouldn't be anything in there other than his personal feelings or comment about something which probably is better left where it is than put on a record somehow. That's my feeling. I don't think there's anything which would contribute very much to it other than that.
Let me see where we are.
And it was they're still in.
Any other questions here that we haven't
going
back and forth here a lot of times, and I forgot.
What contribution do you think I made? Can you?
Well, without being more specific, because I don't recall that many specifics, Carl, I think that basically your contribution was in providing a stability and continuity in a situation which badly needed it at that time. There was that. We needed to have that kind of contribution, that kind of stability, and we badly needed to have it. And I remember when it was being talked about that you were looked upon as the stabilizing influence in a situation which had dramatic potential for exploding all over the place. And we were much, concerned about it, and we were concerned that we had to do everything that we could to enable you to hold all the reins together, as it were. And that was as I recall, was not an easy assignment, because I know you had various kinds of factions of one nature or another to deal with, and then on top of it all, you had us to deal with, and us, quote, was consisted of a wide variety of individuals. And I know sometimes we had our differences of opinion. You advocated things that you thought were important. We had to weigh them in terms of, etc. But we never had, in my recollection is, I know I never had disagreement so much as relationship of priority. And this is one of the things that we always had. Now, one of your successors, I sure as hell had disagreement. I remember the... I'll tell you a funny one. I don't think I've ever told anybody, and I'm sure that he probably would remember. I told John Pohl one day, "John, you are not cut out to be president of any institution, let alone Stony Brook. That's my opinion. I think that I'm doing you and the university both a service in not agreeing to your appointment at Stony Brook at this point." John was much taken aback, and I liked him. I really liked him. But I was having to use my judgment it was some responsibility on my part. And we had a few more words of one kind or another.
Is this in 65?
And I said, "John, you got to understand, this is not something personal. It's just that I'm evaluating the situation the way it is and what I think. And I'm telling you that that's what ought to happen." John says, "Well, et cetera, Larry, et cetera." And we shook hands and he went out the door. And about 10 seconds later, he came back in the door in his own inevitable fashion. And John says, "Larry, do you mind if I wait until there's a more academic person here?" I said, "John, you're welcome to wait." I said, "God love you, you're welcome to wait as long as you want to wait. I'm just giving you the benefit of my best judgment." And lo and behold, it wasn't very long after Sam Gould came in as the more academic person that he and John worked up a marriage, and John became the president. And all the things that subsequently took place, I carefully refrained from saying to John or to Gould, "I told you so." But I remember that incident so much. But to go back to your original question, this is what we had to have. Now, a lot of people will know about specifics of your contributions at the campus level, as it were.
Who would know? See, Hamilton is gone.
And
Porter has had a stroke.
Porter's on, yeah.
How badly off is he, you know?
He's not well.
He's down in Chapel Hill.
No, I got a letter from his wife just now, and this Christmas, and in it she spoke of how he has difficulty speaking, and he has difficulty with a number of things. He manages to walk, yet with some difficulty, but he struggles to walk as exercise, and he's improved from what he was. I guess this stroke took place like 2 years ago, and he's had some rehabilitation success, but it still has left him with a speech impediment and various things. So I really don't think that he's able to respond to, as it were. Now, he might be able to respond to some written inquiry. I don't know about that. I really don't know.
But I'm driving down. And I was thinking.
You have his address where you?
I think I do.
They moved to, in Chapel Hill, they moved to an apartment there.
But I don't. I'm pretty sure I don't.
She spoke very, what shall I say? Sadly, I guess would be the word to describe the circumstance and the difficulty that was involved in breaking up home,
Could you let me have the address?
Probably, yeah.
Because
let me see if I can go find it.
Harry and I got along very well, I think,
Harry was an extremely good individual.
Yeah.
I had a great affection for Harry, he's the type of fellow that could adjust to things.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever saw Harry be emotionally
upset,
agitated, or angry, or what have you.
Right.
Even on occasions when he ought to have been, for his own well-being, probably, because I'm sure he had an awful lot of churning inside that took place.
Yeah.
You need a facility, Charles, right?
This is about Harry Porter.
Yeah, to a higher position where you have to supervise equals peers, as it were, you need a leader to criticize. you tend to have some difficulties, but all in all, Harry was a super person.
He handled some of the personnel problems down there at Stony Brook.
Yes, I remember.
He knew the background.
Yeah.
Some of them.
He was down there for a while, off and on, as I recall, at Tom Hamilton's request. Hamilton was a good president for the time period, but he would turn to me so many times and say, what do we do? I always kind of had a feeling that the management of an institution as big as we were somehow escaped him. He had the unfortunate experience that I'm sure wasn't his fault, but it was attributed to be his fault when he left. He left us in Albany to go to Michigan. He was going out to Michigan on vacation, and so far as I knew or anyone knew, that's what he was doing.
December 62?
This would have been... This would have been August, the first part of August of 62. And as a matter of fact, he called me from the airport. This would illustrate that, what happened. Called me from the airport to say that Would I please talk to John Slocum, because the trustees had requested Hamilton to advise John that he was being terminated in order to have an opportunity to get some of his personal problem behind him. He said, Larry, he said, I can't deal with these things. You got to do it. So I said, well, Tom, if I had to do it, I would have done it before now, because it would be appropriate, to get John help soon as can be. Matter of fact, it was the greatest thing that ever happened to John, because it got him back on the track, and I think he's got all those problems left. But anyway, this sort of illustrates what I'm saying. He called me again from Michigan to say that, Larry said, I'm on my way to Hawaii, and I'm going to be talking down there with the people in Hawaii about the presidency of the University of Hawaii. And he said, I just wanted you to know that. I felt I didn't want to go without somebody knowing it. And I said, of all the things, I said, Tom, all right, I'm glad you told me, but for heaven's sake, don't get yourself involved in something. I said, gee, you're needed here, The next thing I know, I had a phone call from Hawaii. And he said, Larry, things have exploded out of my control. He said, I'm going to be the next president of the University of Hawaii. They're going to announce this in the New York Times tomorrow morning. I can't stop it. Would you please inform Mr. Moore and the trustees about this? I said, Tom, I don't even know if I can get the trustees and Mr. Moore between now and tomorrow's Times. I said, it was like in the afternoon. I said, is there any way that these people can use a little judgment and not proceed? No, he said, the story is out, and they got to announce it. And he said, it's done. So you'll have to tell the trustees. And he said, I'll have to apologize when I get back. So I had the responsibility then of calling the trustees and telling them that Tom Hamilton was leaving to be the president of the University of Hawaii, and he wanted me to tell him about it over the phone this afternoon because it was going to be in tomorrow morning's Times. Unfortunately, I was not able to get a hold of many of the trustees. I got a hold of probably half of them. I did succeed in reaching Mr. Moore, and understandably, the trustees were very upset. This was just not kosher. It wasn't the way you do business. And as I say, I don't blame Tom, because he may have been out of his control. By the same token, sometimes he didn't exercise control forthwith when he probably should have or could have, but anyway, so he didn't get back for maybe a week, what with one thing or another. In the meantime, I'm holding the fort, as it were. But when he came back, he met with the trustees in a special meeting of some kind, as I remember. And he was quite apologetic about the circumstances. But that didn't persuade the trustees that they hadn't been wrong.
Right.
At the same time, he said to them, look, in the meantime, while you look for another president, I'll be here until first part of December or something, I'll be helpful as I can. But he then recommended to the board, and this is how it came to pass, recommended to the board that the board designate me to be the acting president. And his words and substance were, because he's doing it anyway. And that was that. And so at that point, it was a foregone conclusion that that's what was going to happen. And Carl, it was one of those things that was sort of thrust on me, and the board said, this is the recommendation of the president who's leaving, as well as our own recommendation, therefore, you're it, and we don't want to hear any more about it. I was attempting to make the argument that I would continue to do what I could behind the scenes. It would be perhaps more advantageous to the university to have an academic front runner of some kind. Okay? But they would hear none of it. At that juncture, it just was the wrong time, and they had sort of had academic up to here, as they were, you know. And so this is what happened. And Hamilton recommended that's what they do, and that's what they did. He left and went to Hawaii. Which reminds me of another funny story. Subsequent to his appointment, during that time period, we had a long discussion about the advantages and disadvantages of the university acquiring the University of Buffalo, private institution. I was opposed to the acquisition of the University of Buffalo because, in my judgment, I felt we should concentrate on making the university at Stony Brook and the universities at Binghamton and Albany.
The interview with Larry Murray.
One other factor which had real bearing upon our ability to finance was inflation. And this dictated an urgency on our part to move as rapidly as we could, because inflation was eroding the value of the money that we would have available. Inflation during that period of time was running probably 7-8% and went up to as high as 12% in the decade between 70 and between 61 and 2, and 71 and 2, and then on further into the 70s. And this meant that your supply, fixed supply of money, was shrinking in terms of its actual value in the marketplace each year that things got delayed. So if we contemplated that we could build certain sections of Stony Brook in a given period of time, was an all-out drive to do so, and we missed that target by a year, automatically the funds that we had set aside for that particular use were diminished by 10%, roughly, let's say. Well, you can't have very many of those 10% cutting into your funds. 10% a year for 3 years would be 30%. 3 years was generally considered to be a very expeditious time from drawing board to completion of a building. I recall saying to the faculty on occasion that while I'm asking you your opinion of this, I don't really particularly care because you're not going to be here when the building is ready. You're going to be gone somewhere else. And your successor is going to say to me, who was the idiot that had you do it that way? Well, if I'm going to be the idiot that's left, then I said, I probably better make the decision in the first place. But facetiously...
Well, I can think of our 1,100 seat main auditorium down at Stony Brook now, and everybody wishing it were larger.
These kinds of things had to be decided, and the time period was so important that I couldn't waste time waiting for answers. Many times. We just, look at, this is what we're going to do because it's really important to have something. And if we don't do it, if we delay, we're going to not have the money to do it, or we're going to be faced with an increased budget, and right away somebody's going to say, well, we were willing to spend $40 million in that direction, but we're not willing to spend 50. And that was a very important part of our concern. And it was a major problem we were combating all the time. And it used to be sometimes we were holding our breath and see estimates, architect's estimates of the cost of a facility vis-a-vis the contractor's estimates of what he's willing to build it for. And sometimes the architect estimates missed a boat significantly, and then we had to go back and cut something out. And then we'd have the chore of saying, well, maybe the architect's wrong. Maybe that is what it should cost. But on the other hand, maybe the bid is wrong. And maybe we get to take it. And maybe we ought to reject the bids and go and bid it again. But then there were certain laws that apply to that sort of thing. So it was a constant juggling of one thing and another thing to come out with what seemed to be the best result. But that inflation did have a significant, posed a significant problem for us all along.
Steve struck me as being a can-do kind of chap.
Yeah, completely so. Yeah, completely so. He was an individual who, again, he was a fellow who knew academic world. He was a teacher of architecture and RPI, and yet he also had a real down-to-earthness to him. And sometimes we're startling and problem-wise to Torgo's probably maybe the paper.